This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and last week, I said it was episode 126. It was actually episode 125. Today is episode 126. So, sorry about that. It's been a good week. It's a beautiful day today. Really beautiful day today. It is like 86 degrees outside. There's a little bit of a breeze blowing. Nice, cool breeze. Very nice today. Not bad at all for middle of August in Springfield, Missouri. Because normally, in the middle of August in Springfield, Missouri, it's 95, 98, 100, pretty good humidity. Oh, and the road today is smoother because they redid all of the road alongside where my major client is, and so they just got that finished up today, so it's very smooth, very nice. It was interesting with that because they were using these big machines, of course, to put it down, and apparently they would lay it down, and then there's something like underneath the machine that goes and kind of tamps it down. Well, when that thing got next to the building and it was tamping it down, like the building was shaking. It was cool. I liked it. It was like, whoa, feel like I'm back in the Philippines with earthquakes. You know, and you'd hear things kind of rattling a little bit when it was going. So it was fun. That, of course, brought some to have discussions about earthquakes and who had been in earthquakes and all that kind of thing. So it was amusing. It was fun. Anyways. Let's see, what else? I am still working on Grumpy Old Prophets. That is going swimmingly well. It's so interesting. I think I had mentioned last week how I thought a conversation was supposed to be between Mary and Moses in the temple, and then it just wasn't happening. And then finally, I realized, no, wait a minute, it's not between Mary and Moses, it's between Mary and Elijah. And suddenly, just poof, the whole scene opened up and everything was good. I've since written a couple of more scenes, or at least made some headway on a couple of more scenes. And one of them was Jesus' first trip back to Nazareth after the baptism. No, second trip back to Nazareth. And it's where he talks to the people at Nazareth and tells them, basically, I'm the Messiah, and I'm not going to do any miracles for you. And they go and they try to throw him off a hill, and then he leaves. I'm just on the tail end of that one. What was interesting was I knew that was the scripture that I was supposed to use, but I didn't know what the scene was. I didn't know what the heart of the scene was. And I thought it was a second scene between Jesus and his family, because there's a first scene between Jesus and his family a couple of chapters back, and it's got some humor to it, so I thought, well, I can exploit that again, kind of lighten things up a little bit, have a little humor. But I kept trying to go down that path, and it just, you know, I couldn't find the tone, and I just couldn't catch it. And so I thought, well, let's just get them seated and let's get the meal started and we'll see where this goes. So went ahead and kind of brushed over it, didn't make it humorous, kind of rocked back, made it the Sabbath meal on Friday night because Jesus teaches in the Sabbath before they try to throw him off the hill. So I was going to make this the Friday night meal, and they were going to just skip the Friday night service because Jews aren't required to go to all three services, but they usually attend at least one service during the Sabbath. And at least according to my research. So I'm sitting there writing and I'm going, okay, well, let's get into the dialogue for the dinner. Let's see what's happening at the dinner. I start at the dinner and I'm looking and all of a sudden it's like, no. Dinner. And then suddenly I realize, oh, that's right, there's people gathering outside their house because they want to see Jesus, because they've heard just all kinds of amazing things about him. And so people have kind of started to look around and look in the windows, and maybe this makes some of the family members upset. Okay, here we go. Now we have something we can play off some emotional content to. And so I started writing that and writing that and writing that. And then at one point, I have one of the brothers, the eldest brothers, James. At least I'm assuming he's eldest because he's mentioned first in the Bible. You know, gets up to go outside and see what they want. And as soon as he walked outside to find out what they wanted, it was like, oh, that's why they're there. And then the whole chapter opened up. Poof, just like that. And that is not what I intended to make that chapter about. But it's just, creativity is a fascinating thing. It's just absolutely fascinating. Because it just takes off on you in different directions. You know, you think you pretty much got a good idea of where things are going, and then all of a sudden, it just takes a left turn. Really interesting. So, I'm enjoying writing this a lot, and I think it's going well. I think it'll be very enjoyable. So, that's that. As far as today's topic goes, I think I mentioned several weeks ago, so I don't know how many episodes it was ago, frankly, by the time you've done 126 of them, and haven't kept very careful notes about what you've talked about. I don't think I've talked about this before. I've kind of always kind of held this in my back pocket, but it's been something I've been thinking about for several years. And I wanted to kind of make sure I had things settled in my heart before I talked about this. And I'm not going to say this is the definitive word on this subject because it's a fascinating subject, at least to me, and it is the subject of attraction. Subject of attraction. We power our society on attraction. Anytime we want to sell something, we go find people who are attractive. So they can smile and show it to us. So that we'll know this is a good product. It must be a good product because attractive people are holding it. And I know it's a good product because if I was with that person and I was using this product, my life would be good. So this whole concept of attraction, it came up this last week when I was talking with a friend. I've had a continuing conversation with this friend for several weeks, several months now. This particular friend just went through a divorce. And as I would chat with him about the impending divorce, we actually had a couple of close calls. But then they thought about it and kind of moved back and from it and recovered. And then, you know, there came the final decision. And as I was chatting with my friend about it, frankly, they had pinged back and forth on enough issues that they were both tired. And they both had their viewpoints. And I have told my friend point blank, you know, if we remove the flesh component from you and from your wife, you'd still be together because they enjoy each other's company. They enjoy spending time together. They just get on each other's nerves a little bit because each of them has different perspectives and goals for life. Okay. So, being the firm believer that I am in free will, I have been very open with my opinion to my friend, but he knows me well enough to know that I love him and his former wife now very, very much, and it's their decision how they're going to live in life, and I'm not going to reject them because of that, and I'm going to advise them that there's possibly a better track that they can take, but when they choose to take a track, that's their choice. So that's the road we've been going down. I have attempted in all of this to at least help him, because he's the only one I'm having conversations with, help him steer clear of what I know is going to be the flesh's path of attack in his life. And so I've tried to say, okay, this is what's coming down the road. Because as I've talked with him about what he envisions in the future, the first set of things that he was envisioning was merely working at home, well, still working at his job, having time to himself, and being able to work on more creative endeavors in a deeper capacity. He has creative endeavors, working on them in a greater capacity, because he said, I'll be able to go home, and I'm just going to work on that, focus on that. You know, I'm not going to worry about dating and those kind of things. And okay, that's fine. And I had told him several weeks ago, here's my concern. I say, you say that's going to do that, and right now it's fairly easy to believe that you're going to do that, because the flesh has dropped back. And so it's gone sub rosa. It's gone under the covers, because it's gotten what it wants. It's gotten a certain level of destruction, and whenever the flesh gets that, it will drop under the covers for a little bit. Because it doesn't want you to be thinking about how much destruction you're causing around you, and so it'll lighten up and disappear for a while. Well, it never really disappears. It just stops talking about that particular topic for a while. But I said, what's going to happen is that within weeks, within months, the flesh is going to start rearing back up again. And you're going to be looking here and there, and it's going to go, oh, well, that now there looks like somebody would be, oh, you could go out with that person, and you could do this, and you could do that, and you could pursue this. And I said, my concern is when that happens, that you're going to get next to someone else who is pretty much going to tell you anything you want to hear. Pretty much going to be anything you want that person to be. Until you marry them, and then their flesh is going to rear up, and then we're going to start this whole thing over again. Well, he had said, no, I'm really content just to be by myself. Okay. So, this last week when I was chatting with him, he started telling me about how he had gotten in contact with this lady because he remembered her from a band he was playing with, and he had gotten hooked up with her on Facebook, and so he sent her song, and you know, yada 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 yada, this stuff was going on. And I just looked at him and I said, so when you just imagine what might happen from this, what do you imagine is going to come of this? In other words, I was asking him, this attraction that you're feeling, where do you imagine this is going to go? And what he told me was, well, you know, might date, and if we date and we find we're compatible, then, you know, might settle down, might have some kids, might, you know, all of a sudden, it's way in the future, actually the potential as someone who is a mate, a wife, a spouse. And I started backing him up, and I said, you don't know anything about this person. Zero. And yet, you're willing to consider them as a potential mate. Well, you know, we'd have to get to know each other. I know. I said, I know. But she's already in the slot. of being, this is a potential mate, and you have no idea who this person is. So what are you making this decision? How are you arriving at this decision that this person may be a good potential mate? Simply because you're attracted to her. Well, I told him, I said, I've been pondering this whole thing with attraction for a while. And so I started talking to him about attraction and romance and all those types of things. And I've been thinking about it more through the week. And honestly, I think a lot of what we call romance and attraction is just flesh. Period. Because it really doesn't have a chance of coming out successful. I think people can grow into a love that is successful. But I think just because you're attracted to each other in the beginning, that doesn't ensure that the relationship is going to be successful. And many times it is not. Years ago, my daughter and I went to see a movie. I think it was like Charlie's Angels or something. And there was a guy in it that was supposed to be a good guy. Kind of dweeby, a little bit good guy. He was really the bad guy. And at one point, there's a big reveal where he's a bad guy. And instead of dressing in white, now he's dressing in black. And he's smoking a cigarette. And my daughter says, okay, so why is it that I'm more attracted to the bad guy than I am to the guy when he was the good guy? And I've been thinking about that. And I think what it comes down to is your flesh, if attraction is driven by your flesh understands that the bad guy stands a much better chance of creating an environment of failure for you. And so it's going to attract you to the bad guy as opposed to the good guy. The good guy might require more maturity. The good guy might require you to do your part. If you're dating the bad guy and he's a bum, then your flesh knows that it can get you to do all sorts of crazy things. And it tells you, well, you know, you won't have to be nearly on your guard. You can do whatever you want because he's a bad guy. He's not going to condemn you. Okay, that's great. That's what we want to happen. And as I've been thinking about attraction this week, I've really kind of churned all that stuff back up and thought about it some more. And really, maybe at the base of it, try this on for size. Your flesh knows that there is a place deep within your spirit that will only be satisfied by a vibrant, wonderful, creative, intimate relationship with God. There's a place within you that defines your wholeness, that the only way that will get filled is with God. Everything else, every other substitute, will in the end not satisfy. And so what the flesh tries to do is it tries to get you convinced that other things will plug that. Oh, that person, oh, you know, just think of how you'll feel when you're with that person, how they'll make you feel. And I listen to female Christian artists, and this week I've been listening to Sarah Groves, and I really like Sarah Groves. She's got a lot of great stuff. But there's some of her songs where it's like, oh, come over and touch me on my arm so that now I'll be able to fly and I'll be able to do this and, you know, speak to me softly and now I'll be able to fly. And in other words, my relationship with God isn't sufficient for me to be able to experience all the wonder of life. I really need you to come over and help me with that. And we really sort of have canonicized this idea that you're just part of a person until you have someone to make you whole. Well, there is someone that can make you whole. God can make you whole. And I told my buddy when I was chatting with him, I said, before you start conceptualizing or the flesh starts leading you to be attracted to all of these women for what may happen if you date them, before that all happens, I said, what you need to do is you need to fill up that space within you. That intimate, creative, wonderful space that's in you. Where you're experiencing this relationship, this powerful relationship with God. And I said, once you get that filled up and get that in place, then you don't need to look around just for somebody that you're attracted to, per se. Because the flesh is not going to give up. It's going to keep trying to get you together with the wrong person. What you need to do then is you need to find someone else who's done that as well. Who has filled up that space within her with a vibrant, intimate relationship with God. Not someone who's looking to plug you into that space so that you will fix the fact that they haven't pursued God to the fullest degree that they could. And he was hip to that. I'm getting my mail. I mean, he, you know, after I was talking to him about it, he said, yeah, no, he said, that's right, that's right. So, you know, it's good. So I'm hoping that he follows that. I'll be chatting more with him. And I'm really looking forward to seeing. I have a box that I have to pull out here. I know what this is. This is my touchpad. I didn't get one of the $99 touchpads. I actually got the second round on eBay because I did have a usage for it, and I didn't want to pay $500-$600 for a touchpad. So I just got one for $220. So ta-da, and it's in. So, anyways, I told the guy after we had chatted as we were wrapping it up. I said, I tell you what. I said, I have a hero when it comes to relationships. I know a guy, and he is my hero. I said, he has no idea that he's my hero. I've never told him that. I said, he is a guy I've just been just barely tangentially acquainted with. He might know my name, maybe, backing into my garage. But I said, this guy is my hero when it comes to relationships. Backing into the garage. Hey, there we go. This guy, part of his story is heartbreaking. Not going to use names, but I'll give you the quick synopsis. Part of his story is heartbreaking, but it was, from the outside, amazing to watch. I knew this guy many, many years ago. He attended the church that my wife was music minister at. Really good guy. You know, just good spirit, good heart, passionate about Christ. He was married to a really wonderful woman. Funny, creative, loved God. You know, everyone who knew her, was around her, I think would say that this guy had married up. You know, I mean, she really was a wonderful, wonderful woman. As it turned out, she died. And I remember thinking at the time how sad I was for him. And I also remember thinking at the time, and this was flesh, thinking at the time, I don't think you're going to find somebody like that again. Because just to look at this guy from the outside, he's not a guy who would stand out on the crowd. And just for being around him, you'd say, well, he's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy. Good heart, hard worker, nice guy. But not really extraordinarily different, seemingly, than a lot of nice guys that were around him. And some people would even, if they were thinking about him and his wife, say, well, he kind of lucked out on that one. You know? And it was sad when she died. I wasn't in close contact with him. He was a distant acquaintance, and so I lost track of them very quickly. And many years later, there was a speaker that came to my major client to speak. I was not in those particular meetings, but the people who came back and were in the meetings with this woman were effusive. Said, wow, she was really good. Very soft-spoken, but when she'd talk, you'd just go, okay, that's an interesting thought. You know, I mean, just really. And they told me what her name was, and I thought, that's an interesting last name. Don't hear that last name very much. Wonder if she's related to that guy that I knew whose wife had died. Started doing some research on her, author, travels around the country speaking. I get on her website and, you know, read her bio a little bit. And I recognize the guy's name. He's her husband. And I remember thinking at the time, jokingly, somewhat in the flesh, are you kidding me? Two in a row. I haven't had a chance to actually talk to the guy and find out what his secret is. But I suspect I already know what it is. And I suspect it is that he has filled himself up with God, and that he has made a concerted attempt that when he's looking for a life partner, he finds someone who has filled herself up with God as well. Because from the looks of it on the outside, from just what little I read on the bios, and I subsequently read one of her books, and I looked her up yesterday, and now she's doing small discipleship things where she gets together on a weekend, you know, with four or five women just to pour into their lives. And you read her stuff and it's like, okay, yeah, you're plugged in. It's good. It's good. And I am just really thrilled for my acquaintance. But more than that, that guy is my hero. So, you know, if you are listening to this, and of course the caveat, always got to put on the caveat, because the caveat is, you know, I'm married to a wonderful woman, I love my wife, yada, yada, yada. Okay. So if you're listening to this and you are single, you don't just ping pong around and run after everything that you're attracted to. Because chances are, if it's just a glance, if it's just a sentence you've said to them, that's flesh. Because you have no idea who that person is and if you would be a good fit for them and if they would be a good fit for you. Instead of thrashing around, start from a place of wholeness. Fill yourself up with him so that you hear his voice every day and you're living in abundance. Have creative endeavors. Branch out. Give yourself to others in works of service. Become a whole person yourself. And then look around for another whole person. And you might find treasure where you least expect it. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.